In Iowa, the sight of a bald eagle was once very rare. Today, it's commonplace, but that doesn't make it any less stunning or inspiring. This hour, bald eagles in Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here today. When the cold sets in and most of our rivers and lakes freeze, bald eagles congregate around areas of open water. We'll talk about the best places to see bald eagles, and we'll talk about their life cycle and place in our ecosystem. Stephanie Shepherd of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Wildlife Diversity Program will also be here to talk about the latest information on population numbers. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It wasn't very long ago that catching sight of a bald eagle in Iowa was a rare and wondrous experience. Now it's a common and wondrous experience in our state. This hour, we're going to talk about bald eagles in Iowa, and wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here today. Hello, Jim.
Hello, and good morning on this frosty morning.
Yes, quite chilly out there. Perfect for eagles, right?
It is.
And
it's not bad at all.
Jim, almost every time we do a show, we tell an amazing comeback story.
Yeah.
The eagles have an amazing comeback story, but it's different than most of the stories that we tell because, of course, they weren't nearly hunted out of existence. They almost disappeared for other reasons.
Yeah. And as you say, this is one of those comeback stories that is a bit different than many of the species we've talked about. Instead of being restored intentionally, these have come back on their own. And I think it's a wonderful story because it says what we can do as a society, as a people, as a government, if we choose to. And it's amazing the wildlife did respond. These were certainly persecuted by people in the 1800s and early 1900s, just like many other wildlife species were, because of the lack of laws or the lack of enforcement and carelessness, greed, those sorts of things, those human characteristics that we seem to have a fair bit of. Eagles were really going downhill very quickly, and there were a bunch of acts passed to try and protect them and other things, everything from the Lacey Act to the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, and that gave them some protection. But again, you have to enforce those laws. But they continued going downhill even after the passage of the Bald Eagle Act in, I think it was 1940. By the 1960s, early 1960s, when I was growing up in southeastern Iowa, you know, to see an eagle was not only uncommon, even rare, but to watch them, basically what you saw were adults, nothing but adults. That's because the young were not surviving. We began in the 1940s to use DDT rather extensively and other what are called organochlorines, pesticides, and it was being used for just all kinds of things, from crops to household pests to, you know, is amazingly broad use. And DDT had this wonderful, if you're into pesticides, it's good because it's very persistent. You can put it on once and it sticks around for a long, long time, years, in fact. And from a pesticide standpoint, that's a great thing. On the other hand, it also is very persistent in the systems of animals that happen to take it up. It may not kill them, but it has other unintended consequences. And in eagles and a number of other predators, particularly predatory birds at the top of the food chain, one of the unintended consequences was that it affected their ability to breed and to bring on new generations. It affected them primarily by concentrating in their fat reserves and causing their systems through a variety of mechanisms to not be able to form calcium around the eggs very well. And so the eggs were extremely thin and when they would sit on them to brood them, they would break. Or they were infertile oftentimes, too. So the whole series of physiological consequences in eagles and other top predators. And as a result, there was no recruitment, no young coming into the population. So when I grew up in southeastern Iowa, when we would go down to the heating plant in the wintertime to watch eagles, because where the effluent came out of the electrical plant, it kept the water open during the winter on the backwaters of the Mississippi there. And we could watch a few, but they were almost always adults that were fishing right in front of us.
So once scientists and environmentalists realized what the effect of these pesticides was on the eagle population, and it took a lot of convincing to stop using those pesticides, it still took a long time before we started seeing a turnaround. I mean, you talk about growing up in the 60s, Jim. Of course, I grew up in the 70s and the early 80s.
Right.
I was probably 8 or 9 years old before I first saw a bald eagle when we were camping in Yellow River Forest.
Wow.
And went on a hike, and I saw some along the Mississippi River, but I probably didn't see any more for years after that.
Yeah, pretty memorable experience.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, when did we start to see the population really begin to increase again?
Really wasn't until, well, okay, DDT was banned for use in the United States, not production. We can still produce it and sell it overseas, but just kind of a double standard, it seems to me. But at any rate, it was banned for use in the United States, I believe, in 1972. And we began to see changes in about a decade or so in populations. But it really wasn't. You didn't really start seeing eagles in big numbers and beginning to come back until really the mid-90s, and then they sort of grew exponentially in Iowa. If you think about it, in 63, in the whole lower 48, not including Alaska, the lower 48 states, we only had about 400, a little over 400 nests in all of the lower 48 states, and most of those were not successful. I mean, that's a pretty rare bird. And today, there's something approaching between 8,000 and 9,000 nests.
Wow.
That we know about. Yeah, it's an impressive comeback. So the first nest in Iowa, if DDT was banned in 72, the first nest that we saw in Iowa was in 1977, and that was the first nest in Iowa in 75 years. I mean, that's amazing. The last known nesting before that was 1902.
That is remarkable.
Yeah, it is pretty phenomenal.
Well, in just a few minutes, Stephanie Shepherd from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources is going to join us so we can talk about the number of nests in the state today and an idea of the population. But most of us don't actually see eagles at their nests, especially, right, of course, not this time of year.
Right.
We see them around open water. What is so attractive about some of our Iowa rivers to eagles this time of year?
It's fish. These birds are primarily fish eating birds. Certainly they're opportunistic, and they'll take a good deal of waterfowl, ducks and geese, that sort of thing. And they have been known to scavenge on, like most predators are opportunistic. They'll scavenge on on roadside road kills and things like that, but primarily these are fish eaters. And open water in the wintertime means an ability to find fish. Now in Iowa, wherever we have dams, and if you look along the Mississippi, there's a whole series of locks and dams from Minneapolis clear to past St. Louis, and those locks and dams, wherever you put a dam up in the river and allow the water, although there are no boats going by Iowa this time of year because the rivers are to my knowledge anyway, I think it's pretty well frozen, at least in sections. But there's open water below the dams, and often fish, particularly a fish called gizzard shad, will come through the turbines or through the dam itself and be sort of stunned and be on the surface and be easy pickings for lots of eagles. And there are other dams as well, certainly all of the Corps of Engineer dams, from everything from Red Rock to Sailorville, all the Coralville Dam, all of those various dams have the same sort of thing, as well as some of the small hydro dams that are still present, whether they're still producing hydroelectricity or not. There's still some dams on many of the smaller rivers in the state, and there's often open water below those, and they will take advantage of all of those to fish in those open waters.
And they seem to get along well with one another. I mean, as you know, I work in the Iowa City office of Iowa Public Radio, and we're just a couple of blocks from the Iowa River, right down from the hydroelectric dam here.
Right.
And so many eagles congregate very close to the office, and there will be 12 of them all sharing a tree together.
Yep.
So they seem to not be upset about sharing their hunting grounds.
Well, they certainly share roost sites, and in the wintertime. Now, during the breeding season, as we get towards spring, and we're just starting into winter, so I hesitate to say that the S word, you know, spring.
It's going to be a while,
right? And but as we get towards that, they'll be a little more territorial. They certainly don't want to share their fish, but it's not beyond them to argue over a fish. One may fly down and grab one, and as they fly up, others may decide, "Hey, I want that fish," and they'll go after them and try and get them to drop it so that others can nab it. But during the wintertime, they are less territorial. They're very territorial during the nesting season, but during the wintertime, they're less territorial. Now, the other thing is that they want to sit near water, near open water. They'll often feed first thing in the morning, right after first light. They're out there fishing. And it depends on the use of that corridor. They will tolerate one another within those day roost sites because it may be the only tree or a grove of trees that's big enough to support them in the area. So they're tolerant up to a point, but not necessarily tolerant for all that long.
Well, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back and we'll talk more about nesting sites and population in the state of Iowa in just a moment. I'm talking with wildlife biologist Jim Pease, and we're talking about bald eagles in the state of Iowa. We also want to know where your favorite places are to watch eagles. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about bald eagles in the state of Iowa, and we'd love to hear about your eagle encounters, your favorite places to watch bald eagles. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. We have a couple of responses already, and wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here with me today. Jim, Shelley on Facebook says that her favorite place to watch is right from her living room on the upper pool above the lock and dam in Davenport.
Yeah,
she says the partially frozen river makes for good fishing. The only downside are remnants of eating from the trees in our backyard, which is a small price to pay. We have also this from Stacy on Twitter. She says, we had about 40 eagle sightings a few weeks ago during a hike at Backbone State Park. Magical no matter how many times you see them.
Yeah, I think it's true. It's just one of those things. There's such a I was driving down the freeway to Des Moines yesterday, and a young, probably 3.5-year-old eagle flew across in front of us. My grandson was with me. I said, look, it's an eagle. And he said, how can you tell? And I said, look at its size and the pattern of the beat of the wings. This is a big, big bird. And it's really just wonderful to see them. It was just fantastic.
Now, of course, I get excited every time I see one too, Jim. But my kids, they also love to watch the eagles. And I drive out of the way sometimes on the way to school because there's a guy who has a farm field next to his house, and he's a deer hunter, so he'll put the carcasses out. And he's had up to 50 eagles just in that field eating on leftovers. And I get so excited, and now the kids have seen so many eagles that it was a couple of years ago that my son just said to me, why, Mom, why do you get so excited every time you see an eagle? But I told them it's because when I was growing up, I thought my kids would never get to see an eagle.
Exactly. And it is amazing. Amazing when you think about that, and you can't blame them because it seems much more common now. Just like seeing westerns, even seeing otters, trumpeter swans. I still get excited at all those things because they're back.
Right.
And I know how much effort it took. But for them, it's like, oh well, I see that all the time.
Right.
You know, yeah,
they're still incredibly beautiful.
Right.
And I want to bring Stephanie Shepherd into the conversation now. She is with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources in the Wildlife Diversity Program. Hello, Stephanie.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And I know that the DNR tracks eagle populations in the state of Iowa. How do you do a survey of? I mean, they're pretty they're easy to see at times, but they can be hard to find their nesting areas. How do you track them?
Sure. We actually have two surveys, one of the wintering eagles that will happen actually just in a couple weeks. It's done in the first 2 weeks of January. It's called our Bald Eagle Midwinter Survey, and folks drive routes along the rivers and count as many eagles as they can. And that usually tells us, as isn't surprising, that most of our wintering eagles like to hang out on the Mississippi and the Des Moines River, but they are also spread out, you know, throughout the rest of the state. And then we also have a nest monitoring program where we actually pretty much 100% use volunteers. They go through a training, and we assign them a nest site that we know about and have them actually watch from a safe distance and record, you know, information about the birds nesting. And actually, you know, most of our database of bald eagle nests has come from Iowa citizens just reporting on nests that they've found. An eagle nest is a pretty amazing spot when you finally see one, and it's kind of a huge, you know, 6 foot wide, up to a ton in weight thing sitting in a big tree. And once you've seen one, you can't mistake it for something else. So
it's not like a squirrel nest.
Right.
These are
the
big
other raptor
nests
look pretty dinky. So,
right.
So Jim, do the eagles come back to the same nest every year?
Yeah, usually they may use one or more nests within their territory. They will often build or partially build a nest in another part of their territory that they defend during the nesting season, and may change for one reason or another. And certainly if the tree falls down or the nest falls down in a big storm or something like that, then they either have to rebuild in another location, sometimes within their territory, but sometimes have to find another territory as well. But yes, they do tend to use same nest areas, the same territories year after year.
So, Stephanie, from your most recent numbers, how many active nests do we have in Iowa?
Well, our numbers, which, you know, are probably not complete, so you can imagine that there's probably a few more than this number, but we have about 363 bald eagle nesting territories designated as sort of occupied or active in the state. A big concentration of these are in northeast Iowa, and particularly along the Mississippi and the Upper Mississippi Wildlife Refuge. I think Allamaquee County alone has something over 100 nests.
Wow.
In that county. It's a pretty big number, and we get in the total database, if you look at from 1977 on, we've had well over almost 700 bald eagle territories reported in the state.
Wow.
And we only have three counties that don't have a recorded bald eagle territory. So if you are in Osceola, Union, or Monroe counties, keep a lookout for eagle nests and report them. Those are the last three counties that we don't have records in.
Oh, that is remarkable. Can you give me an idea of what the chart looks like over, say, the last decade? Is this a number that's been growing rapidly?
It's been growing. It's a little bit hard to judge because we're not doing a, standardized every year surveying, the entire state for all nests. The data reporting is opportunistic as people report them. So, some years we just may have more people reporting. So you can't necessarily look at a trend, but it's been generally upward for sure.
And, oh, Jim?
I was going to say that I remember in 19, I think it was 98 or 99, we had, Stephanie, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but something like 177, 180 nests around in that area that we were watching pretty carefully. And we, I think many of us thought at that time that things were going to level off.
Around
that, And eagles keep teaching us over and over that they are much more tolerant than of humans than we thought they were. And Iowa maybe has some wildness still left in it.
Well, and I'm sure it's easy to think the same thing now. Do you still think, Jim, that we've reached this this cap and maybe things will level off?
I think I've learned never to say never. I think it may will continue to grow as long as the other thing that threatened them certainly wasn't just persecution by humans or DDT. It was certainly habitat. And in the case of eagles, big trees near and along rivers are really, really important. And if we take to removing those, then it will not only level off, but it'll go down. That's my fear.
Now, Stephanie, you also do this survey in the winter of all, because obviously we have many, many more bald eagles who love to come and fish in Iowa in the wintertime. From last year's survey, what kind of a number can you put on those eagles?
Last year, it varies a little bit from year to year based on what kind of winter we have. But last year, there was about almost 2,800 bald eagles counted on the routes that we have, which, again, that doesn't cover the whole state. Probably about 50% of those are on the Des Moines and Mississippi River, but then others, scattered throughout the other waterways. Probably our high in past years has been about 4,500 eagles counted. And that's within a two-week period of the winter. So that's a lot of eagles.
Well, and so the colder the winter, the more we see? Is that the...
Actually, it's sort of you really kind of want a moderate winter. The harsher it gets, I feel like there's a lot more competition at those open water areas. So you may lose some of the juveniles. They may move further south. They only move as far south as they have to find, good food resources. And so a really harsh winter may push them a little bit further south. A really mild winter spreads them out over, the entire river. And so you just don't get those concentrated counts. So somewhere in between actually ends up giving us our biggest numbers.
And
Stephanie, I was going to ask you, is there a pool among wildlife diversity staff as to what your count's going to be this year?
There isn't. We should, but that's a great idea.
Absolutely.
Like, winner brings donuts.
Oh, okay.
So, now, of course, we've asked our listeners to call in and tell us their favorite places to watch bald eagles. There are some sort of celebrated spots to watch bald eagles. My favorite spot is two blocks from the office. But Stephanie, what are some of the, from your perspective, best places to see a lot of bald eagles?
Well, certainly like the southern half of the Mississippi River along the lock and dams has traditionally been a really good place to see a lot of eagles. There's, of course, a celebrated yearly Bald Eagle Watch event in January down in Keokuk, Iowa, that has kind of been traditional in many years. They haven't seen as many eagles there in the last couple years, but it's anywhere along the Mississippi, that southern half of the Mississippi, is a great place to see eagles. And one of my favorite places, just because it's so, it kind of gets, if you're in an urban area, you can see lots of eagles, is the 6th Street Bridge in Des Moines, in downtown Des Moines. Just go hang out on that bridge if you work in downtown Des Moines during your lunch hour, and you can see lots of eagles fishing right there, 50 to 100 eagles.
Oh, wonderful. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Stephanie Shepherd of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Wildlife Diversity Program. And Jim, we talked about those nests. And of course, the eagles are on the rivers right now. When do they go back to their nests?
Well, they'll begin, there are some, one of the things that's sort of, again, they're teaching us, there are some pairs that will tend to hang around, be resident year round. So they'll nest here in the summer and they'll sort of hang around in the winter, and they may begin, actually right now, some pairs are probably already beginning doing a little housekeeping around their nests. That tends to sort of stabilize the pair bond and gives them, they're adding sticks, or they're cleaning the nest from, any late fall storms that may have messed it up, and cleaning up any carcasses left behind from last year's chicks. So they're doing those housekeeping chores, and they'll get pretty serious about that in February, where they'll add to that nest. And I don't know if our listeners heard what Stephanie said. This is a nest that is 4 to 7 feet across, and because they come back to the same nest every year and will add sticks to it, these nests tend to get larger and larger and larger. So the 4 foot wide ones are sort of new nests, and they may only be a couple feet deep, but eventually this nest can be 7 feet across and 10 feet deep.
Wow.
It takes a substantial tree to hold that kind of a nest. As she said, they can weigh up to 2,000 pounds, the very, very large nest. Now, that's not the norm, but it's certainly not uncommon in very old nests. So it's pretty amazing. So they'll get serious about really adding to their nest, carrying some sticks back, adding to the nest, and then they'll begin to lay eggs in March. This is what we call the science of phenology, what happens at certain times. And certainly there's a lot of individual variation, but you do have some pairs right now beginning to kind of mess around in their nest territories and do a little housekeeping along the area.
Well, you mentioned habitat loss, those great big trees being lost as something that threatens eagles. Bill from Sac City wants to talk about another threat to eagles. Hi, Bill.
Well, hi, Charity, and thank you for taking my call, and thank you to Dr. Pease as well.
Sure.
And one of the poisons in the environment that currently kills eagles is the lead shot from lead bullets and lead shot that hunters use when hunting game. And the eagles feed on game that was not retrieved by hunters that have lead in them.
Right.
And I know of one raptor rehabilitator from the town of Dedham, Kay Newman,
mm-hmm.
Who frequently rehabilitates lead-poisoned raptors. So I would encourage hunters to use non-toxic ammunition when hunting game, including deer. And we happen to be right in the middle of the gun deer seasons now, and
right.
I'd like your impressions, Dr. Pease, as to what you think of that condition.
Yeah, this came to sort of the came to realization of the hunting community in the last few years. Kay has been doing a lot of rehab she rehabs a lot of raptors, hawks, owls, and eagles, and as well as the Raptor Center at Minnesota. And because we have a shotgun season, in Iowa, and that means shotgun slugs. Slugs have traditionally been made out of lead, and when the lead enters the cavity and kills the deer, sometimes it's lodged in a bone or in the guts, the gut pile that gets left behind when the animal is cleaned in the field. And eagles, as well as other numerous mammals and birds, take advantage of that those things that are left behind. And sometimes, if the lead ball is left behind, or pieces of it within the meat are left behind, then it gets ingested, and it doesn't take very much to cause lead poisoning. And it's a very serious problem. I think there's been a growing awareness of this in the within the hunting community. I know, for example, lead shot was replaced on with steel shot or something non-lead in hunting upland birds, grouse and pheasant and things like that. Was required for waterfowl hunting so that lead didn't get in water. And I think many of us went to simply always hunting with steel shot instead of lead. It didn't matter whether we were hunting ducks or pheasants or whatever, just using steel all the time. And I think there's a growing awareness of this problem within the hunting community, and there's certainly a lot of support within the hunting community for switching away from lead and using copper or copper-coated steel, all kinds of variations.
Although we have heard some very vocal opponents as well in the last couple of years.
Yeah, there have been some vocal opponents, and I think it's unfortunate. I think there were lots of vocal opponents to replacing a lead shot with non-toxic shock in waterfowl, but eventually it was accepted. So the vocal ones seem to be the ones that get hurt. but I think it is going to happen, I think, gradually.
Bill, thank you so much for your call. We're going to take a short break. I'm talking with wildlife biologist Jim Pease, and this hour we're talking about bald eagles in the state of Iowa, a truly remarkable comeback story. And we want to hear from you. Where is your favorite place to view bald eagles in the state? Or tell us about a close encounter you've had. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about bald eagles in Iowa. My guest is wildlife biologist Jim Pease, and you are welcome to join our conversation as well at 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jim, we've talked about habitat loss, and we've talked about lead poisoning being something that threatens bald eagles. What other threats are out there?
Well, I think that those are I was going to talk about future threats, and those are the two on my list. And I want to remind our listeners of when we had DDT, you were talking about that there's a lot of vocal opponents to changing from lead shot. And you know, change is hard for people. It seems sometimes very hard. And we look back on DDT in the 1960s when Rachel Carson published the book Silent Spring, which brought the whole problem of organochlorines, and DDT wasn't the only one, but it was certainly the major one at the time. Boy, did she get opposition. Holy mackerel. In part because she was a woman, given the times, and most scientists were male, not female. She took incredible grief within the scientific community, as well as the political community, but especially within the scientific community. I think that's the part that hurt the most, was that fellow scientists were poo-pooing this whole thing. And it took time to educate people. And I think the same is true of lead poisoning today, is it takes time. Some of us take a long time to change, and it's going to it eventually comes. And I think the same is true with habitat. One of the things that is dangerous right now about having so many eagles around is that we take it for granted. Just as we were talking about kids saying, well, gee, what's the big deal? I see them all the time. Same thing was true with deer. You know, in 1900, there were no deer left in Iowa. Holy mackerel, that's hard to believe. We all kind of take these things for granted when there are so many around. And we want to make sure that we don't do that with bald eagles. They have since 2007, been taken off the endangered species list. That's a victory, I think. They're still certainly protected by other laws, in particular the Bald and Golden Eagle Act, but still we can take them for granted. And I think that may be one of the biggest threats, is that we do take them for granted, and we don't want to do that.
And we have this email from Cindy in Ames making a very good point about our conversation about lead-poisoned eagles earlier. She says, in case some listeners get the wrong impression, many lead-poisoned eagles cannot be rehabilitated. They die, and it's a very painful death and very disturbing to watch. And I know at least three rehabilitators in the state who have had to watch that happen to eagles under their care. So
yeah, it's very, very difficult. Lead poisoning, any kind of poisoning. Poisoning is why when people... as I worked as a extension wildlife specialist for so many years, and I would give people a series of options, and they'd say, well, isn't there just something I can put out and they'll just die, you know, away? And I say, you know, poison is a really tough way to go. It's not something I would wish on my worst enemy, and poisoning of any kind is just not a pleasant a thing to watch, that's for sure.
Certainly. Let's get back to the phones. Craig is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Craig.
Hi.
Hi.
It seemed like lead ammunition is also about power, money, and votes. Look at what the governor did.
Sure.
But what I wanted to talk about was this site just north of Quaker Oats in Cedar Rapids. It's a great big tree without any leaves, and usually there's about 40 to 50 birds sitting on this tree, about two-thirds the size of an eagle, and this eagle was circling around, and it decided to land on this tree, and as soon as it landed, all those birds at the same time came off that tree. Why is that?
Just decided to go elsewhere. Now, was this an adult bald eagle that landed?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the others you say were not eagles?
No, they weren't. They were about two-thirds the size of an eagle.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about a bird that has adults will have a 7.5 or to 8 foot almost wingspan. I mean, this is a very, very big bird. This is a bird that weighs 8, 10, 12 pounds. So this is a very large raptor. In most species, they recognize the profile of a raptor, a predatory bird, and you'll notice this at your feeders. If a very large bird comes over, sometimes it's only a crow, but songbirds at your feeders will freeze. Thinking that, oh boy, it's a hawk and I might be eaten, and it's a natural sort of innate response to that. And I think again, with a great big bird like an adult bald eagle coming into a tree, the other birds are going, I'm going to let him have this. It's a better part of valor is letting them have their way. So I suspect they just decided that it was more sensible to just let the eagle have the tree.
So even though eagles don't typically prey on other birds,
for waterfowl.
Birds that might have been roosting in that tree, it's
right.
Better safe than sorry.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
If you're hungry, you're hungry.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right.
Now, it's interesting that tree that he's talking about, if this is a large dead tree, our tendency as human beings is we want to clean things up. And if it's dead, gee, we may as well take it down. Well, those large dead trees are really, really important for all kinds of species, but including eagles as roost sites. So that's another threat to them down the road, is making sure that we have large trees in our river bottoms and near our river bottoms, in those riparian areas along that zone, both dead and alive, as not only nest sites, but
roost sites. So if that ancient cottonwood kicks it,
yes,
go ahead and let it stand.
Yeah, let it stand there. Absolutely.
All right. And we have a lot of people sharing their favorite places to watch eagles, and I'll read some of those comments in just a moment. But this entire hour, we've talked a lot about seeing adult eagles and seeing juvenile eagles and how you didn't see any juvenile eagles when you were growing up. But we do see a lot of them now. And what do they look like? Because some people mistake them for other birds.
Oh, yeah. They look a lot like sometimes they'll look like golden eagles. They'll look like hawks. They're certainly smaller than the adults. It takes 5 years to get the adult plumage with that white tail and white head. And there are stages in between. The DNR Wildlife Diversity Program has just put out for their chickadee checkoff. They put out a new small poster which shows sort of the wonderful stages between the chick in the nest and the 1.5-year-old or the 6-month-old bird, the 1.5, 2.5, 3.5, and 4.5-year-old bird plus the adult. And there's a gradual shift in the amount of white on the head, on the tail, on the wings. They look very mottled. And boy, people could take a look at that and really see the difference from year to year. It's quite dramatic change. So it takes 5 years to get all the adult plumage. The 4.5-year-old even has some brown on the tail and still brown around the head, around the eyes especially. And the adult at 5 years of age then has fully white head, fully feathered out. They're not truly bald, and an all-white tail. But there are stages in between that are really pretty dramatic to watch.
We have this email from Nick in Chicago. A true joy when returning home to Dubuque is to watch bald eagles from atop Eagle Point Park, looking down upon the lock and dam. The eagles on the ice are great, but the real excitement is finding the eagles hidden in the trees. From the park, you view the eagles from above, an amazing sight when they take flight. And we have this question from Bob in Chickasaw County. He says, I've spent about half of my life in Colorado where golden eagles were as common as bald eagles. Do golden eagles have a presence in Iowa?
Yes, they do. It's not a nesting presence, not yet anyway, but primarily during migration times we'll get reports of golden eagles. And they are difficult. You have to have sort of an experienced eye to tell them apart from juvenile bald eagles.
Are they as large?
Every bit as large, absolutely. But they have these windows on the wings that are quite quite telling, and they're quite a beautiful bird as well.
All right, and golden eagles, have they also made as much of a comeback as bald eagles in the areas where they're common?
No, not to the extent. They're certainly better off than they were 40 years ago when DDT was still being still legal to use. But it is they're certainly better off than they were.
Let's go back to the phones. Joanne is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I live on the north side of Des Moines, and it's been a year and a half ago. I was driving to Ankeny to a doctor's appointment at 8 o'clock in the morning. And as you drive north, you go down, people that are in Des Moines will recognize this path, but go down Des Moines, you make a right-hand turn, go by the Johnson soccer fields, and you go over the river. And it was 8 o'clock in the morning, and so I expected lots of traffic. But everybody's going like 5 miles an hour, 10 miles an hour, and it was bumper to bumper. And I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, there's probably been a terrible accident down here. And then I started to see cars parked along the side of the highway. And pretty soon I saw all these people out of their cars with spotting scopes. Mm-hmm. And there's a four-way stop. And the northwest corner of this four-way stop, it's a low-lying field. And in really wet weather, it gets flooded. So it's never very deep, but there will be ducks on it sometimes. Well, this time, it was full of eagles. There were trees along the edge, and they were just full of eagles. And they were many were diving into the water catching fish.
Sure.
And it was just wonderful. It was all these people. Nobody was honking because nobody wanted, you know, to miss anything. And
that's great.
And they caused a full-fledged traffic jam.
Yes. And you know, I go by there, not very often, but, oh, I just live in hope that I'll see that again. But
sure.
I haven't noticed it. That low-lying field does get flooded occasionally when we have floods or really a lot of rain. But
sure. Yeah.
I don't know how the eagles found it.
Yeah, it's they're opportunistic, and because they've got those eagle eyes, if you will, they can spot things at a great distance away, and they'll take advantage of an opportunity whenever they can. It's quite spectacular. It's always nice when people appreciate it. So even though you're caught in a traffic jam, keep in mind, boy, it's a good reason to have a traffic jam. You know. That's terrific.
Joanne, thank you so much for your call. Harlow's on the line next in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Harlow.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
What?
Hi, Jim.
Hi there.
I'm Harlow Haddo. I teach at Coe College. I'm an ornithologist there, among other things.
Sure.
And just a couple of observations. One is that the blackbirds that your caller a few minutes ago saw in trees along the Cedar River in Cedar Rapids were probably double-crested cormorants. There were many dozens of double-crested cormorants up there fairly recently.
Oh, so they were perched on that tree before the eagle came in. Sure.
Yeah.
That's great.
And I think that the eagle probably, if he had a chance, would probably eat one of them.
You bet.
at least they would probably not feel very confident around him. The other thing I wanted to mention, though, is that, you know, we think of eagles as being associates of wilderness or wildness, but in Cedar Rapids, at least, there are at least two active nests. There's one which is close to Highway 100, and it has been producing chicks now for several years.
Mm-hmm.
And then that one that the caller referred to along the Cedar River, right in town, or very close to Quaker Oats, is also an active nest. I don't know if they've produced chicks or not, but the adults build the nest, and, I haven't personally seen chicks there, but it's active year after year. So it's fun. I mean, we have lots of urban habitat in the state. Urban habitat is increasing at the expense of wild areas, and that eagles can nest in sites like this, if you give them a chance, I think is encouraging.
Yeah, I think so, too. And one of the things that was quite interesting, I said a number of years ago that when we first got a few nests in Iowa, I thought, well, we'll never have more than a handful back in Iowa, because eagles are too wild and Iowa is too tame, but eagles have taught us otherwise. and you're absolutely right. Some eagles are very tolerant. We have a nest in the city of Ames that is within just over a quarter mile from the Target parking lot, you know. So it is amazing what they can get used to. Not all pairs are that tolerant, but certainly some of them are, and it's really a wonderful thing to have them back.
Well, and I feel like most of Iowa is incredibly familiar, intimately acquainted with the nesting habits of eagles because of the fabulous Decorah Eagle Cam
Eagle
that so
cam,
many
yeah.
of us watch so closely. But for those who haven't, when they do go to those nests and they lay those eggs in March, how many eaglets do they usually have?
They'll lay one egg per day and sometimes skip a day, but they'll start incubating immediately. And they may have usually it's two eggs, occasionally three, but when the first one starts to hatch, it's about a 35-day period of incubation. And when the first one hatches, then the second one won't hatch until a couple of days later because it didn't get it's slower developing because it got laid a day or two later. And so there'll be sort of an older sibling and a younger one. And if push comes to shove, if things don't go well for the food supply or something, then the younger one often doesn't survive or gets pushed out of the nest by the larger
one. But we are
one,
producing so. Plenty of juvenile eagles now that we'll all get a chance to see. Jim, we're out of time, but thank you so much for being here today. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease in Ames. He's also an environmental interpretive and wildlife consultant in the Ames area. And Ben Kiefer is here with me in the studio now. You've got an exciting week coming
up. I do. Coming up at noon, we're going to rebroadcast a program about crime, the crime of stalking in Iowa. Tomorrow night, if you haven't already checked it out, why don't you join us for Politics and a Pint with NPR's Don Gagne. He's going to be in Des Moines. I'm going to be there. We'll give him some Iowa trivia that I think even Charity Nebbe doesn't know.
Really? Have you been stumped, Ben Kiefer?
I have been stumped many, many times, more than I'd like to admit. So find out on our website, iowapublicradio.org. Love to see you at Politics and a Pint with Don Gagne.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ben Kiefer. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Support today from Jason Burns.